And we are recording.
Excellent. How are you? Good evening.
Yes, Adam.
Adam. Eben, how are you?
I am well. So, yes, I am Eben Matthews.
I'm Adam Martin.
Adam Martin. Welcome.
M2.
We are M2, and welcome to Mythmakers, which is a show all about storytelling, the process, people, and power of story, and often about us, but also stuff we're working on, stuff we're thinking about, things
we're
think
doing,
are
what, seen,
what we think done. Is kind of valuable in building great content in all sorts of mediums, things that thrill us, that make us think, and ultimately that kind of get us engaged.
Yes, get us
and
excited.
Hope will engage you as well.
Yes.
So, you know, a little background, if you're not familiar with us, together we have over 40 years of experience developing, creating, and delivering content across a wide variety of media.
Mm-hmm. We live out here in Hollywood, California.
We're working on some very cool stuff, which we often and including also now will not be able to yet talk about.
Yes, going to hash through some deal details,
yes.
But some cool stuff.
But what we can talk about, if you have not yet downloaded Macroverse, please go do that.
Exactly.
So Macroverse is our comics app. It is what we believe the future of comics is. It's on the App Store and Google Play, and our first launch series called Deadtown
is about to, the final episode of that is about to come out.
The final episode of
season one.
Definitely not the final episode of that.
Yes.
And then we also have some more Deadtown news. The same property, but a different storyline will be continuing on the Yarn platform as well. And so we should have more details around that actually on the next episode.
Yes, it should be released very soon, in fact.
This is episode number 42.
Yes.
You can find all of the previous episodes by subscribing or searching on iTunes, Google Play, wherever you get your
SoundCloud,
podcasts.
All that fun stuff. Yep.
Wherever you pod.
Yes.
So tonight we were
going to... Cast your pod? Is that like fishing? Like fly fishing?
Casting your pod? I don't know. It could sound a little dirty too, depending on your particular frame of mind.
Podcasting? No, I don't get it. I think that's just you.
I did say depending on your frame of mind.
Right. Uh-huh,
uh-huh. Now that we know who has the dirty mind in this partnership.
I would normally have assumed it was me, especially, yes. But no.
I mean, only one of us is dealing with giant prosthetic dicks on a regular basis.
This is true. Yeah. Handling giant prosthetic dicks might be the appropriate use of
we'll,
that word.
We'll leave that to the imagination. It's him.
Yes.
The topic for this week...
Professionally, I hasten to add, not in my spare time.
Oh, that doesn't make it any better.
Makes it slightly better,
I mean,
it?
Only if one knows precisely what your profession is.
This is true. Prosthetic makeup artist? Maybe it works.
I mean, there are people whose jobs include prosthetic dicks all day long, but just depends on what you do for a living.
This is true. This is very true.
Anyhow.
Yes.
Right
along.
Tonight's topic is actually very much based on us having recently seen Upgrade.
Yep. Just got released in the movies a couple weeks ago.
Upgrade is another wonderful Blumhouse picture.
Yes.
Low budget sci-fi
kind of 4 to 5 million, right?
Around 5 million. Yep. Kind of sci-fi action horror movie. Also fits into a thesis which we've talked about and I've mentioned before of mine, which is, I think, kind of more sophisticated, kind of thought-provoking sci-fi
yes.
content is very much on the rise across media right now.
Mm-hmm.
So an interesting time, which I'm all for. And this definitely would fit into that category. So it's, you know, it's certainly a fun romp, but also definitely a commentary on AI and sort of our machine and human interaction, as well as kind of the implications of surveillance and, you know, kind of
and
what
the limitations
of
surveillance and human kind of evolution on a funny level.
Yes, exactly. So there's a lot of kind of big ideas
they don't
under
all
the
work.
Surface. They don't all work. No, there are some flaws
some,
in the movie.
Some
and
issues. But
we both enjoyed it very much, I think I can safely say.
Oh, absolutely.
And I definitely recommend it.
Yes.
Definitely well worth seeing.
And it definitely also crosses into that kind of action not quite horror, but very gruesome action. Yes. Not in a kind of Deadpool way either. It's good.
Yeah.
You know, faces there, being there are, cut in half.
Yeah, so major spoiler alert. If you don't want any details about Upgrade before you see it, then come back to this episode later. We are going to talk more specifically about the film itself, but we also thought as a topic of conversation for this show, you know, kind of looking at it from a writing and creating standpoint. Yes. As some of the kind of benefits and potentially some of the drawbacks of, you know, thinking about something that is designed to be in a sort of low budget, you know, context. So,
and using the very nature of that low budget as its own kind of asset.
And in fact, it's not completely irrelevant for some of the work that we're doing ourselves right now, which is, you know, using the limitations of a particular medium as a strength as much as possible. You know, as a follow-on, one of the shows that we both listen to is another podcast called Script Notes, which is fantastic for anyone of the writing persuasion.
Yes.
This most recent episode of Script Notes, actually unbeknownst to me, I started listening to it, and hey, it's the writer-director of Upgrade.
Who's James Whelan, I believe his name?
I think that's right. He was also the writer, of Saw, and also the, another big Blumhouse franchise, Insidious.
Insidious.
Really interesting guy. He's an Aussie, so you get the benefit of that accent throughout the throughout the podcast. As you can tell, we also have this benefit.
Explains why they shot in Australia.
Yes, it does very much explain why they shot in Australia. Also, budget was a big reason why they shot in Australia. And there's a, you know, we leave this to, for you to find on their show, but a very fun exploration of the differences between American, European, Asian, and Australian film production methodologies, especially as it relates to safety and concern.
Oh, interesting, yes.
So very, very fun discussion there. But one of the things he mentioned, which I found fascinating and kind of led us to start talking about this very topic, is you know, very much the blueprint for Upgrade was the original Terminator he talked about. Mm-hmm. And apparently there is a, this now is a holy grail for me in Los Angeles, there is a Bond house, so a place that writes the the bonds for movie budgets, that has the one page budget for the original Terminator on the wall.
Oh wow!
And so apparently you can go and see this actual budget from Terminator, and Terminator was a $3 million movie. Which
$3 million in 84, so obviously around 12, 10 to 12 today, maybe. Yeah. But yes,
But apparently the way that he pitched and ultimately got Blumhouse on board was, you know, kind of, hey, this is the way that we do this. Like, we, you know, study, and apparently he had, you know, very much studied the structure and sort of how Terminator was made, and kind of the very, very much making it feel like a bigger world, making it feel like there's a lot more actual science fiction-y kind of stuff going on than there actually really is if you break it down scene by scene.
And I think that was very, is what he very successfully did. And I'd be fascinated because I feel like it happens in TV a good deal, which is the, and we've dealt with it, you know, we didn't become a Future Man at the moment quite a bit, is the, we've got this big action sequence that we know we need to make incredibly cool, and we know it's going to take 14 hours to shoot this thing that's going to be on screen for 40 seconds. So in order to give ourselves the time to do that, we then have to chomp through and structure everything around that to be done very quickly and efficiently, which means it's not five or six people talking, it's two people talking, and the rooms are, it's in contained locations, and it's in controlled environments, and it's, you know, all these little tricks that one can pull, both from a writer, creative, you know, writing and directing point, to minimize the amount of time you spend on the drama, and not in a negative way. You can effectively, communicate the drama and keep it simple.
Yes.
And then give yourself the time to shoot the action the way you want to shoot it.
You know? Well, I think it's, you know, it's one of the things we're dealing with on this work that we're doing now too, which I think we can say is, you know, at least some of is geared towards the, you know, kind of more content for the Yarn format.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things that I, you know, it's sort of a cliche, but I think is especially true in this case, and you can see it in something like Upgrade, is the, you know, kind of embracing the constraints as a way to find creative solutions to things, which I think in many cases actually does give you a more interesting result.
Yes.
And so, you know, in our own case, you know, kind of some of the conversations that we've been having, you know, inevitably kind of come to, yes, if you were doing the $100 million version of this, that's what you would do.
Yes.
But how do you do the $10 version of this?
Exactly. Yep.
And then, yep, you know, kind of having to talk through and figure out like, oh, okay, well, sometimes that means rewriting a section of it, or sometimes that means reconceiving a way that, that right, this is going to play out, or delivering that information in a different way.
Exactly.
And
it goes back, you know, you could look at Jaws and the, yeah, shark, as, mm-hmm, it were. It's like, great, let's hide this shark, yes, until the very end.
Yep.
Because it looks bad.
Yes.
But then it became incredibly effective.
Exactly.
That hindrance became,
and I think one of the mechanisms there is to look at, you know, kind of what do you have that you can easily use to build bridges between those sort of bigger, more intense moments. So whether it's, yes, the, whether it's picking like, okay, here are the two kind of bigger things that we can shoot, which are going to be these very impactful, intense, you know, kind of bigger production moments that kind of make this feel bigger than it really is. Or it can even be the, you know, okay, we know that, you know, we can't see the shark, so we need to reconceive the way that the tension is kind of the star of the show rather than the shark is the star of the show. Or, mm-hmm, in the case of Terminator, they talked about, which I think is a great way of saying it, it's like, you know, Arnold is the special effect in that movie. Like, yes, you know, at that point in his, you know, career and physique, right, it's like you totally buy, like, this is a robot come from the future to kill kill Sarah Connor.
Yep. Yep.
So you only need the one, you know, true visual effect shot at the end of the robot to, you know, really buy that.
Sell.
And
exactly,
in it almost creates a sort of retrospect feeling about the movie where it's like, oh, like, yes, that was this thing the entire time. I fully buy it. And it could, yep, have, you know, even, yep, even in a way kind of plays with your own recollection of like how much they actually got out of that quote unquote effect.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that's great in Upgrade, you know, in a similar, along similar lines, you know, the main actor is very much able to sell, you know, when it's him in, yes, control of his human body versus this
computer
exactly, you know, implant that's in control of, yes, his physique.
And he does a very good job. You know, I think there's a couple things there. One is, none of these actors are people you know. You've seen a bunch of them around, but they are not stars by any means, which means, obviously, they're cheap.
Yep.
But they're also incredibly good, and they really work very, very well. And when you've got an effective story, and an effective, yep, you know, when the biggest star of the show is the Blumhouse name.
Yes.
You don't need a whole lot of expensive talent around to support that.
Yes.
You need good, you don't need expensive necessarily.
Yes.
And secondly, you know, to that point, this actor was terrific with his physicality in this role. So he really did move differently, walk differently, you know, hold himself differently when he was in being under the control of this device.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they also used the camera very creatively with that.
Yes.
What I think is that the camera is kind of maps to his body in a way, like the camera movement. So like he's walking down a corridor, and normally as you're moving, you're on a steady cam, so the camera is staying pretty still, which means the body is, so the corridor you're walking down is basically receding at a uniform way. And then the actor is moving up and down, mm-hmm, as you do as you walk down the frame. What they did, I think, is shoot slightly wider lenses, punch into that, map the actor within the scene,
yep,
and then have the corridor move around the actor.
Yes.
Which creates this very odd effect.
Yes.
And done differently, because there are cameras that are, you can body mount a camera. They used to be called, sure, doggy cams.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very different effect, because, yes, you're fixed position normally on them, sometimes, right, over a shoulder. I mean, there's amazing sequences.
More of a third-person shooter video game,
exactly,
kind of feel. Yeah.
Yes. Whereas this was a very distinct effect done, I think, in that way. But,
yeah,
it was very, very impressive.
It was very cool.
Really well.
Yeah,
and like moving as he's moving within the frame, and like he's doing these backflips, and Blumhouse has started to do some of that stuff with the Fast and Furious. James Wan has started to do with Fast, yeah, and Furious, where you're kind of, the camera's moving with the actor as he smashes through a table, as,
yes,
it were.
Yes, yes.
Which looks amazing.
Yes.
And so when this chap is now doing kind of backflips and the camera's moving with him, and then he's, you know, leaning backwards rapidly to move avoid a punch, and the whole room is kind of around
Yes.
It just looks awesome.
It looks really cool, and it really sells the effect, and yet you can guarantee it was a very simple thing to set
very
up and
cheap
shoot.
Thing to do.
So it's, you know, I think it goes back to, you know, this idea of, you know, looking at what you do have, leaning on the things that you easily can, that you can easily do.
Yes.
And then picking the moments that are going to make it feel, you know, bigger and broader.
Exactly.
And more expensive.
Exactly.
And more sophisticated.
Yep.
Than it actually really is. And that combined effect, I think, can be incredibly,
it's great.
It can work incredibly well.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you lean into it. I mean, this is a, you know, not by any means a direct correlation, but I always think about in these types of things, I always think about the, you know, the great quote from Robert Rodriguez, you know, making El Mariachi.
Yes.
Where, you know, it's like he even went into the script writing with like, okay, what do I know I have? I have a guitar. I have access to this town in Mexico. I have a turtle. So these things are all going to go in this script. So I think, you know, there again, it's like, you know, taking stock of what you have. I mean, in our case, you know, so anyone that's not familiar with the yarn format, again, lots more from us is going to be showing up there. But, you know, it's essentially this concept of kind of eavesdropping or you know, seeing the conversation that's happening between different
two people.
Usually two people, sometimes more people, within the context of a text chat on your phone. So within a text thread with, you know, different characters. And so, you know, one of the things that we try to think about is like, you know, okay, so that's the starting point. And then what are the other types of things that you actually can do with the phone? So it's trying to use this device, which, you know, sort of a meta concept where you're consuming the story
through the thing that is telling the story.
Yes. And so that opens up some interesting ways of thinking around, like, you know, well, how, what else do you do on your phone within the context of a text thread? So, you know, it's like there are times when I'm texting with my wife or other people where it's like, oh, let's meet here so I can send her the map location, here's a review to this restaurant that we're looking at, or here's a you know, this screenshot of a different text thread from somebody else. And so, you know, being able to think about, like, again, these are the tools in the toolbox. And then in the case of the stuff that we're working on right now or with Dead Town as well, it's like, you know we want to have these few moments which are going to feel like these bigger moments. So maybe that's a piece of video or a piece of animation or, you know, something that's, you know, has more to it as far as the production side, that then again sort of retroactively makes the whole thing feel bigger and more expansive.
Yes.
So I think it's, you know, it is interesting to sort of have to in a lot of ways kind of come around to that and embrace those constraints as a strength rather than a weakness.
Exactly.
Or as something that you have to kind of work around.
Yeah. No, exactly.
And so, yeah, I think, you know, it that kind of applies across the board when you, you know, do have those constraints. And I think, you know, one place where, you know, huge, you know, big budget movies can get in trouble is when they don't have those sorts of constraints and you give people the you can do anything, you know, opportunity.
Right.
And sometimes that goes off the rails.
It's not good.
Know,
yeah.
In a way that doesn't work just because you don't have to solve those problems. Like, oh, just throw some more money at
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. No, it's interesting. And looking back at, so Michael Bayano with the original Bad Boys.
Yeah.
It was a very tight budget. I want to say it was kind of a $20 million action movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously when Will Smith and Martin Lawrence were not movie stars. It was like the above the line talent was not expensive on that.
Right.
Bruckheimer was probably the biggest draw there.
Yeah.
He was told, like, great, you've got this car chase. You've got 3 days to shoot this car chase, and here's what we need. And he initially apparently kind of panicked about that and then realized, no, here's what you do. You do all your actors coverage, poor man's process, and then you spend, so you can do all the actor coverage in 2 hours, and then you're spending the rest of your time shooting the outsides, running around blowing stuff up.
Yes.
And that, he's continued to do that. So if you look at his, and I only realized this a few years ago,
poor man's process.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. So if you are driving in a car as an actor, actually driving in a car, talking to somebody else next to him, you have a couple ways to do it. You can either put cameras on the outside of a car and have them drive, or you can more often you tow it. So you have like this big kind of tow truck, basically, with camera mounts on it, and then you're pulling the car down the road, and the actors pretend to drive, and you're doing this thing, you know, you're kind of looping this section of road over and over again, which creates a slightly more realistic feeling. Or you put the actors either against green screen, which then you have to shoot plates for, and then you have kind of grips and people like shaking the car as it's going. Or the even simpler version of that is either it's night, in which case you've got just black, kind of big black cloth all around the car, and little bits of kind of interactive lighting. So you've got these kind of lights on swings that swing over as, you know, as if you're driving under a street lamp, and this light goes from the front of the car to the back of the car. So you get that interactive feel, but it's all done on a stage much, 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 much more cheaply than it would be to actually shoot for real out on the street.
Yes.
And then you can do the same thing in the day with just kind of blowing out the windows, making everything very bright. You get a little bit of kind of movement outside from the sense of things going by. But a lot of the time, especially in action, you can get away with simply shooting actors either against black or against white. The camera's moving and shaking a bit. You're kind of zooming in and out. And you're getting all that interaction without ever the need to either put your actor in a dangerous situation or to run the hassle of mounting cameras on cars, which takes forever. So you can then just shoot everything from outside with stunt doubles. You're cutting in and out of the action with the real actors in these vehicles. And it works incredibly well. And if you watch Bay's car chases,
yes,
all the, or 98% of the actor dialogue, if you look at it, isn't tied into the action. You
right.
go through kind of cut by cut, and the 1.2 second cut of Sam yelling in Bumblebee, like, oh, wait, the windows are blown out, which means he's not actually anywhere near the freeway that then the craziness is happening.
Right,
on.
Right.
And it's a great, but you don't notice,
you don't notice
it
in the context of it.
In the slightest.
Yeah, that's great.
Which is very, very cool. But it means you can be very efficient then with how you shoot your action, which is, takes up a great deal of time but is obviously a lot when you're trying to do a stylish action movie, like you need to take a lot of your time to do that stuff.
Yes.
But then again, I think what Upgrade did was very smart was they had most of their fights even were two people fighting in a room. Like the first big, whole big thing is a dining room of a house.
Right.
There's like one computerized desk that he smashes through.
Yes.
The rest of it is two people fighting.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Then the next one, the next big fight is the same kind of, you know, he goes into a small bar. So he goes out of his tiny alleyway. So yeah, it's not exterior and there's some grunge to it. There are two people in the alleyway, walks in a bar. There are like 10 heavily tattooed people in a bar.
Yes.
And then
the
he gets dragged into
in
a
bathroom
where he knocks out two of the people quickly and then he's into that, you know.
Right,
very efficiently done.
Yeah, you're right. And actually, you know, what's great about that too, and it goes back to what we were saying earlier, I think, you know, you can create perception that feels large. So like actually one of the earliest scenes in the movie is one of the most elaborate, which is the sort of, you know, robot cars and car chase and sort of, you know, the car, actually not really the car chase part at that point, but it's like you're seeing, you know, seeing the technology that exists in this world in a context that feels big. You meet the kind of billionaire inventor and he's dealing with this sort of holographic cloud. And so you kind of get these bits, which are like clearly like we're living in this kind of very advanced futuristic world.
Yeah.
And then you can spend the majority of the time in these sort of actually very easy, practical places like the bar, the alleyway, but you've set this context in the viewer's mind of like it's in this big, you know, futuristic place.
Yes.
And so you never feel like, oh, we're in some smaller world because we already know we're in this bigger world.
You spend the money on those, exactly. Yeah. We're doing this on Future Man right now without giving any details away. It's like every time we're in this particular environment, all right, well, if we're there half an episode, there are 3 or 4 shots that will happen that will show you the scope of the place. And the rest of the time, you're in and around these containers and you're into this world and you're in these standing sets that are all totally practical.
Yeah.
But you never feel small when you're in them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's very effective. And so I think, you know, the lesson, as we've said, is like, I think it's, you know, whatever the medium, it's, you know, being aware and giving some thought process to, mm-hmm. like, kind of how, you know, in the best possible way, how do you manipulate your reader, your viewer, to create the sense of the place, time, you know, kind of experience of the story that you're telling. And then if you do have constraints, yes. then embrace those constraints to, exactly. you know, kind of lean on the things that you do have easy access to, that you can work with, that can build the emotional tension right. or, you know, the exactly. kind of the actual plot and story that you're telling mm-hmm. within the context of this thing that you've now established. I think that all, you know, kind of applies across the board.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yes, yeah, so I think, you know, with that, I think, you know, to kind of wrap up the upgrade conversation.
Yes.
So our kind of mini review of the movie. So, again, kind of overall, really enjoyed it.
Overall, thoroughly enjoyed it. There were some kind of pretty significant plot holes, yeah, I would say.
Yeah, I think the one thing that bumped me, and I think they just squeaked through for me where it wasn't actually almost movie ruining, was, you know, a lot of it is very predictable.
Yes.
And then there is a twist at the end which you don't see coming and redeems it enough where you go, yes. okay, like,
no, you forgive yeah, the
you
other,
forgive a exactly, lot of the exactly. a lot of how predictable it is otherwise.
And I found the very much the same thing with A Quiet Place that I saw a couple weeks ago, where there are a couple of thumping great plot holes in there. And yet the rest of it works so well that you're able to, you're happy to forgive them.
Yes, exactly. You know? Yeah. So to me, that was the biggest thing, was just sort of from a kind of story script structure point of view. Yes. I think they could have been a little more clever and a little less.
A little less telegraphed with
where it was heading.
Yeah.
And actually, in our discussion after the movie, I think, you know, there were even some pretty available ways to do that, even within the structure of what they already set up. You know, it's kind of a couple of missed opportunities, which kind of could have helped create a little less, you know, a little more question and answer, you know, right. scenario, rather than kind of seeing the answer largely from the beginning.
From kind of like, yeah, you know who the big bad is, or who you think is the big bad from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, from very early on.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's, you know, just something we all kind of keep in mind is.
And it's something we kind of try and work through is, all right, are we being logically consistent within this?
Yeah.
Within the parameters. Like, you can take a certain step.
Yeah.
And I think it's the script notes guys talked about it in one I heard recently. It was saying, you know, you can get away with your kind of fundamental coincidence of the movie.
Yep.
Han, like, Luke is the one who finds the robots.
Yes.
Like, that is a fun... Okay, you can credit that. Now, if Luke then continues to just find useful things, then you've got a dull movie in it, who cares?
Or if Han is responsible for financing the rebellion, you've got a dull movie that, you know, doesn't make any sense and shouldn't exist.
And make it, it's going to lose $50 million.
Yes. Spoiler alert. Yes. so I think, you know, that is something that I think we feel is important and, you know, could have actually improved, you know, Upgrade specifically and actually a lot of movies in general, you know, kind of having the real kind of fundamental, like, even setting the story aside, like, what's the fundamental logic of this and how does this actually all work?
Yes.
And exactly. then with that in place, you know, now what's the story on top
right.
of that?
Right, yeah. exactly.
Or
you embrace the silliness and you do kind of, well, then, so moving on from Upgrade to the Wahujima flip of the week.
Yep.
Mine is most definitely Deadpool.
Yes, which I have not yet seen. La, 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 earmuffs. Go ahead.
So when Deadpool get ripped in halfway through. whereas like Deadpool embraces the silliness,
mm-hmm.
so it allows itself, you forgive it repeatedly because it's embraced
right.
its lack of logic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's actually something that Future Man does incredibly well as well,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, it's very early on. It's like, yeah, time travel makes no sense, so don't expect any, and off we go.
Right.
Then it's like, we've got it. This is self-aware. It's fine.
Well, and I think that's the key, though. I think, like, when it's clearly intentional,
yes,
I think we'll kind of forgive anything.
Right.
It's the, oh, like they were trying to do this. Well, and
here, what's the magic act? What's don't look behind the curtain.
Exactly. Yeah. I think those are the places where we are less forgiving.
Yeah, I would totally agree.
Not just us, but I think audiences in general. Yes. It's like you'll kind of go along for the ride if you're going on the ride that you know, that someone is bringing you along for.
Right.
Versus the one that you thought you were going on that then has an unpleasant bump at the end.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, so anyway, my Hoodoo Reflect, definitely Deadpool, yes. Having seen it finally last week.
Yes.
So a little late to the party, but ahead of some people.
Yep.
And
some people have
basically loved it. Had actually laughed out loud. Like, there was a whole sequence in there where I was just crying. So I don't think it was as good a movie in some ways as the first one.
Yes.
But it was certainly funnier and more unexpected. Like, the first one, I think, was a little more linear.
Yes.
Whereas this takes surprising twists and
wild turns, yeah.
In just great ways.
Yeah, I mean, and for me as a child, I haven't seen it yet, but as a child and huge fan of what is now the era of comics silly excess,
yes.
And you know, having been there at the introduction of Deadpool and X-Force and all that stuff, reading all that stuff.
X-Force is a real thing.
Oh, yeah. The Cable and all that goodness.
Oh!
That's all from the comics and
God.
Mr. Rob Liefeld. Having been someone that was there for all that and very much engaged by it, I'm even more excited to see these guys on screen. You know, my Hoojima flip for this week was going to be The Disaster Artist, which I very much enjoyed.
Yes.
But speaking of crying with laughter, my Hoojima flip for this week is the trailer, the most recent trailer for Wreck-It Ralph breaks the internet.
Yes.
And I mean, like, I'm super excited for Incredibles 2 and, you know, Deadpool looks great. And they're, you know, really love The Disaster Artist. We can talk about that now another time. But I have not sat there like crying literally, unable to do anything but cry with how funny that struck me in a while for the new Wreck-It Ralph trailer.
Yep.
Like, that just cracks me up to no end. So I am so looking
Cinderella
forward to that.
Smashing her glass and brandishing it as a weapon.
There's so many little moments, and I, you know, it is just an Easter egg festival for those of us that kind of grew up in that, you know, kind of period of the emerging internet into the, you know, kind of current state of affairs and all the different types of games and all that stuff. I mean, it's just pulling so many threads in the most wonderful
Ralph
way.
And Wreck-It Ralph was such a great movie.
It really was. You know. Yeah, the first one was great. And I mean, I just, like, that trailer just got me. Like, definitely.
It was very, very funny.
You know, L-M... A-O.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah. Wow, that's so funny. Second nature to type it. Actually, really had to think about it. Just say it out loud.
That's funny.
Anyhow, so I think that's the show
that's
for this week.
Yes.
Please, if you're enjoying this, it makes a huge difference for us if you can.
Like it, rate it,
subscribe it. You know, helps other people find this if you rate and review, especially.
Yes.
You know, we all always have to shamelessly promote Macroverse. So we mentioned it at the beginning. We're going to mention it again now.
And then M2Action.
You can find us on social medias.
Yep.
At M2Action. Also, Macroverse is Macroverse app on Facebook and Instagram. Lots of fun stuff on Instagram recently, I have to say. Like, if you check out the Dead Town page Instagram, the M2 page on Instagram, the Macroverse page on Instagram, we've been having some fun with some of the content that we've been posting up there. We also have a very, very recent new Twitch stream set up, which so far is just me drawing.
That's funny.
So if you like to see some time-lapse videos of character design work and illustration work and just some for fun work. There's some cool stuff up on Twitch, which is Twitch, also at M2Action is the profile there.
Great.
We also have at M2Action on Patreon if you want to throw us some financial support towards
always
everything that we're working on, which is always appreciated. And we will be back again
next week. Brilliant.
Yeah, fantastic
episode.
Thank you. Cheers.
Bye.
Oh, I have to actually go in here. Oh, that gives me a chance while I go find the off button to also say our new intro and outro music is by Brandon Weisel, who has been one of our collaborators for years now. Fantastic composer. And did us a solid by throwing those together. That's so very funny. Little brand intro outro that you've been hearing for the past couple episodes. Mr. Brandon Weisel.
Yay.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.